The first of the pro leagues to take the dramatic step of suspending its season soon realized, as all leagues have, that resumption would be complicated. Health and safety issues, financial issues, logistical issues, all unprecedented, and all impacted by the unpredictable nature of a global pandemic. Yesterday, Thursday, the NBA announced its plan to resume its season in July in Orlando at Disney World. We'll dive into the details of what that will look like and how it came together on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by our NBA writer, John Lombardo. John, the NBA has an agreement between owners and players to return to play this summer at Disney World in Orlando, announced yesterday, pending approval by Disney, but that's almost a certainty. What does that look like? Walk us through from the very basics, which most people have probably heard by now, but let's, just as a backdrop, just in case, let's get into when it is, what it's going to look like.
22-team format, Bill, on the NBA 30 teams. 22 will be down there, starting July 31st at Disney. And they'll play 8 regular season games, and then there'll be a new wrinkle here is a playoff play-in, which I think is an interesting idea that a lot of people are interested in. And then they'll start the playoffs, and the season will probably, depending, you know, look to end, you know, sometime in October, and then they will be, the season will be completed. And I think it's a great option for them. Disney being a absolutely suitable place, given the league's business dealings with Disney, the fact that it's going to be, from a safety perspective, very advantageous in terms of creating this bubble-like environment on that campus. I think they have to work out a lot of the safety protocols with the union. That's going to be something that's going to be done very soon, but there are already ideas of how they're going to do that. So, I mean, all in all, I think it's going to be a pretty good outcome for the NBA, given the fact that they're going to be able to complete their season, and, you know, most of the teams will be able to be down there. Of course, the 8 teams that aren't there, aren't happy that they're not playing, will be out of the public eye for, they don't start until December of next year for quite a long time, but you're not going to lose everybody, and I think overall the reception's been pretty positive.
So June 30th, they open training camp in their home cities. That means now everybody's got to get to those home cities, right? For which NBA players may not be the simplest thing in the world. Again, we are talking about a global league.
Yeah, they have to get the players who are overseas back, and it's gonna, you know, I'm sure they'll be tested and quarantined, and then they'll be able to start with camps, and then they'll go down to Disney. I think July 7th or thereabouts.
Right.
And then they'll have sort of like preseason games and scrimmages to get ready. And then they'll start, you know, a few weeks later, July 31st for the first games.
So how'd they land on the structure with 22 teams? You know, it's been interesting as everybody has sort of tried to figure out their way back. We saw the NHL come up with a hybrid model, and the NBA now has its own hybrid. What were those discussions, and was there much debate about it among owners?
I mean, a ton of discussion, as you would imagine, right? They had a restart committee with team representatives, league representatives. I think someone told me yesterday there's anywhere between 12 to 15 people constantly talking, and they wanted to make it as equitable as possible, but also as realistic as possible from a competitive and from a safety standpoint, right? I think, you know, having every team down there became too cumbersome, I think, in a lot of their views. So there was a lot of collaboration, a ton of discussion, both from a basketball operations side, Bill, and from the business perspective on just how to make it work. Lots of considerations from television, media, getting the games in, fulfilling RSN commitments, just being able to kind of emerge both the business side of the league and obviously the competitive side of it. And I think that, you know, the league was fortunate in a lot of ways to have this relationship with Disney because it just fits so well from a facility standpoint, and to have that relationship. And also the league's been down there, right? They had the junior NBA program that they do down there every August. So there's a lot of familiarity, and it seemed, you know, that certainly helped the process a lot.
Well, I mean, for anybody who's been down there, if you haven't been down there, I'll just describe it. I mean, one of the advantages I think they have is really there's this sort of single to the overall campus. There's this single gate that's already set up to funnel people into. Right. So it's not like you can come in from six different ways. You go through this one gate to get to the overall campus. And that's whether you're going to the baseball stadium where the Braves trained for years, or whether you're going to the Milk House, as it was called, which is their basketball facility. And that's the main basketball facility. That's where the junior NBA that you just mentioned play. There's been tons of AAU there over the years. It holds a couple of thousand people, the gymnastics championships there, all sorts of stuff and indoor. And then there's additional indoor training facilities and areas for courts. So lots of stuff that can be used and also can be sort of cordoned off. It's not like, you know, nobody's hopping off the monorail and getting off and wandering into the Milk House. That's not how it works. And so from a safety, you're exactly right. From that perspective, it makes all the sense in the world. Some other aspects of it, though, that the 22 teams, how did they land on 22 teams? Why is that a magic number?
Well, they took the 16 teams that would be seeded for the playoffs right now, and then they added six more who are six games out, right? From a competitive standpoint, that seemed to make the most sense, right? To be able to get the teams that would qualify. I mean, look, the season was almost over anyway,
right?
So there was a good sense of who those 16 teams were, and then they looked at teams would be within, I think, six games out of their a playoff spot. So that's how they landed on that number. And look, not everybody's happy, right? If you're the Bulls, right, you're not playing. They have a new GM and a new front office, and boy, it would have been nice to get them acclimated to coaches and players. You know, the Cavaliers and all the teams that didn't make it, they are, you know, they're out of luck in terms of development and just being able to finish their seasons. So they're not real happy, but you know, I think overall they you know, for the greater good, right? As the sort of view,
right,
of the teams. Would those teams who did not, you know, make the cut to get to Disney want to play? Of course. But, you know, the fact that they did get 22 of the 30 teams, they're overall, they realized, I think, and after much discussion, that this is kind of the best scenario that they can come up with. And, you know, now we'll see how it'll be interesting to see how what the game's going to look like after such a long layoff, despite the fact that they're going to have a few weeks of camp and training and all that stuff. You know, start right up again, it'll be interesting to see what it's going to look like. And there are three main courts down there, Bill, that they'll be playing the games on. So they'll be able to really play a lot of games in a short amount of time. And I think that we'll also see some, I think, as the league works to focus on now the business aspects of how this is going to look, it'll be interesting to see how the league and teams experiment in terms of the product, a play-in tournament. There's all kinds of things,
right,
that they can do. It becomes kind of an experimental area for them to try stuff, right? Because this is such a unique and different format. So they've talked about the playing stuff for the last year. There's a lot of support for it. The owners tabled it. Now they can really take a look at it and gauge it since they're going to have it. I think you'll see a lot of different teams and league look for different branding, virtual signage, all those kind of things from a business perspective. They can experiment now. So that'll also be another very interesting twist in this thing.
Well, that's the addition of those regular season games, right? Because you could have easily pulled the plug on this. You could have even pulled the plug on the season and had a play-in tournament, right? I mean, that you could have said, hey, we're going to go 22 teams. We're not playing any regular season games, though. We're going to get started, similarly to the NHL. We're going to get started. We're going to have some play-in, you know, some maybe three-game play-in series for those teams that were on the bubble. NBA elected not to do that. Now, that's that benefit accrues to both individual teams, right, and two players. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, individual teams get those RSN, those local broadcast opportunities, basically, and the players get to recoup a lot of lost salary, correct?
Sure. And both of those are huge. There's the RSNs, they need to get at least roughly between 70, depending on the team and the contract, 70, 72 games, maybe, I think, 75. So they're going to be real close to making fulfilling their contractual obligations, and no team will ever be writing a check to an RSN in for those teams. So that's huge. The players get 8 regular season games. That's a lot of money, right? If they're able to recoup that, they're still, you know, they're able to really make up a lot of that salary.
Yeah.
And that was a big issue, of course, right? You know, and I think the union and the way the league worked with the union, that was really a key issue to try to preserve as much as you can from a salary perspective. And I think to a certain degree they did, which is why having those additional regular season games preserves that equation. You know, the networks, the RSNs will be happy. The teams will be really happy not to have to make good on any RSN contractual obligations. So I think though that format that satisfies both of those challenges.
Well, you think about any of those teams, if any of those teams that were in the national window a lot, that were on TNT a lot, that saw a lot of those games move into the national window and off of their RSNs, they could have been pretty short. I know Milwaukee, I think, was well short of its commitment, is what I had heard. Right. I had heard that like a month or 6 weeks ago.
Right, and it'll also be interesting to see when they start playing the ratings, right?
Right.
Basketball is back, and it'll be really, you know, depending on the viewership, one would expect that to be, you know, I think they're going to see great numbers,
so
especially initially.
What are they looking at in terms of ways they can turn those Orlando games into local revenue? What can they salvage?
I think what you're going to try to see, there's a big sponsorship play here. I think you're going to try to see teams. There's going to be virtual signage on broadcast for sponsors just to give them exposure.
Right.
And especially the big ticket items such as patch deals and obviously naming rights. There's been talk about, you know, putting the naming rights partners' names on the floor for those broadcasts in the local markets, right? Just to have some exposure to those brands that have paid big money to these teams.
So like we're back presented by whoever.
Right. And now, Bill, a lot of this stuff is in flux. Look,
right.
The focus of what was going on was on the competitive side of
right.
this. Of course, they wanted to get the format and logistics and safety, the things that make – so they're going to – now that emphasis shifts towards, you know, how do local teams leverage this in their own local markets? How do they satisfy sponsorship demands and contracts? How do they engage fans, right? You're going to see a lot of fan engagement stuff on broadcasts, I would imagine. These are the kind of things that they're going to be really working on now in the next month. And I think you'll see some creative – I think there'll be a lot of creative efforts for both a fan engagement standpoint and from a sponsorship standpoint for these teams just to not only, you know, preserve some business aspects of it, but also see what works and maybe how they can incorporate some of the stuff maybe in future seasons.
All right, so that's the revenue component of this. Health and safety. What do we know about where they landed on health and safety? Things like testing, the bubble. Who can be in the bubble? Who won't be in the bubble? There's been a lot of discussion about if you're going to be in Orlando for a while, hey, players might want their families there. What's that discussion been? Has that been an ongoing conversation? Is it almost settled? What are you hearing?
It's, of course, been a huge priority, and it's been ongoing. And what I've heard, and I think what you're going to try to work out with the union is they're going to keep these team travel parties really small and tight. So it's going to, I think about 35 people, players. This is the first sort of the first ring of the first level of safety protocol will be limiting team travel parties to 35 coaches, trainers, players. Keep those and have a very, very, the path of where they're going to be on the campus in the games, have that very controlled and testing and making sure that all the safety protocols are going to be adhered to. And then they're going to keep that real, really tight, that sort of first bubble. And then there'll be a sort of a second level with, you know, owners and families a little wider, and they'll be tested and they'll be very, you know, kept, you know, to they're be controlled in terms of where they are on that campus. I think they'll be very, I don't know what the media available, what they're going to do from a media standpoint. They're working on that, but I don't think there's going to be a ton of media there. I think there'll be a lot of remote, both from a broadcast coverage and from covering the teams. Access to players from a media standpoint is going to be very interesting to see how they structure that. So there's a lot of these things that are still being worked out with the safety. I know that they're going to keep it very, very tight from a immediate team personnel standpoint to keep everybody safe. The last thing that they're going to want to have is any risk of, you know, outbreak or illness. Mm-hmm. They're really going to pay a lot of attention to testing, to controlling, to keeping the players and the immediate team people very, very limited in terms of their exposure to outside. And I think that's going to be something they're going to work on right away. And it's going to be something that's going to be worked in concert with the union and making sure the players are comfortable. And I think we'll be seeing that pretty soon.
Well, one of the real pivotal points for all the leagues, I know, as they examine this, is when they got to the point where they said, we're going to do this in a way that if somebody tests positive, because somebody's going to test positive, it doesn't shut us all down for 14 right. days, 7 days, even 2 or 3 days that they feel comfortable that they can break out a small number and move on. So I think they've gotten their arms around that. There's also been some discussion on health and safety around whether those at higher risk of complications from the virus, particularly those with compromised immune systems, and coaches over age 65 particularly, sure. would be able to participate, even if they want to, because I suspect most will. I mean, you know, you think about some of the over 65s, you know, Greg Popovich, I think Alvin Gentry has already come out and talked a little bit about it. I mean, they might want to be on the sidelines. Where's the league going to be on that?
I think they're going to be really strict. I don't know what they're going to do specifically on that, I think, but I know that right now these protocols are going to be very strict, and for good reason. So I think those are all things that are going to be determined in the near future, but it's a major focus of this whole return to play and going to Disney.
And so you might tell Greg Popovich you can't be on the bench?
I don't know, Bill. I mean, I think you can't. You're not going to have a head coach on the bench. I mean, I think
that's one of the things that's been raised.
If they do, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's one of the things that's been raised.
Right, and it's a concern. And I think there's ways to be able to limit and protect and you know, distance, that kind of stuff. But there definitely are some questions in terms of really how to limit and protect. And I think these protocols are going to be real strict.
You know, it's interesting that this came together really without much drama. Yeah, it's taken some time, but there's been no public drama at all, actually. No acrimony, not between the league and the union, not between the owners. You know, 8 of them will be left out of this. Why do you think that is, considering the way business often is done in sports? I mean, not only between leagues and unions, but even between owners within the leagues, teams within the leagues, which is a lot of negotiating, a lot of posturing, side channels, poking around, looking for allies and angles and leverage. I mean, we've both covered lots of league meetings. You know how those things work, right? There's conversations before the meetings, who's on this side, who's on that side. And right. we all choose up sides. And then yeah, think about the tabling, for example, of the play-in tournament. I mean, those are things that come together in what can be an acrimonious way. What was different this time? How was it different? And why, do you think, from covering the league for as long as you have?
Well, I think there's a lot of trust in with the owners and Adam Silver. It's not perfect, but there's a lot of trust. And I think the way that he has been out front from day one, right, Bill, with the whole issue, I think that the style of Adam is very inclusive. He's a great listener. I think the owners trust him. They don't always agree with him, of course, right? There's always going to be, you know, issues and areas of where they disagree. But overall, there's a real climate of collaboration in a lot of ways, within the owners and the league, and with Adam particularly. So I think his leadership helps. I think with the union, the league and the union, while never perfect and always adversarial in a lot of ways, they've had a good relationship in terms of working together. That helps, as you compare that to, say, oh, I don't know, baseball.
Yeah.
Right. So there is some history of working together with the union. I think Adam has kept Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts in the loop. I think that there's a lot the union realizes and the owners realizes how much, what a financial, you know, hit that would be if they didn't come to this compromise and come to this format. All that plays into it. I think that while those 8 team owners who are not playing obviously don't like that, I think they see the preservation of the league and the salvaging of the financial components of what would happen if, in fact, they didn't play as something that is going to help everybody. So I think all of those things speak to the way they were able to kind of get this. They've also were, the league was pretty fortunate to have this Disney relationship. Mm-hmm. They have very familiar with Disney and being able to, and having previous experience, from a logistical and facility standpoint. So all of those things really help in terms of being able to do this relatively smoothly. I mean, not everybody's going to be happy about it. You're not going to make everybody happy, but I think overall, having that sense of collaboration already built into the owners and the union was a big benefit.
Interesting also the structure of the way that they dealt with this with the players. It doesn't seem to me that they handled it. Labor negotiations are typically, here's our proposal, you take it back and study it, here's the response. That's what baseball's doing it right now. They're handling it as if they did an open CBA negotiation. In this case, hearing that in fact the union, there's not even going to be individual vote, right? I mean, the leadership has touched base with player reps. Player reps know where in their players stand within individual teams. They feel like they're where they need to be with all 30, and off they go, right?
Yeah, and again, I think that speaks to how closely the league and the union were in concert during this whole process. It wasn't like the league was working in a bubble and then went to the union and said, oh, here you go, right? I think they were involved and included in a lot of ways, and that helps.
Certainly a major move forward for the NBA. It looks like all that's left is sort of an exchange of the documents. So there are dates, there is a schedule, there's a plan, and it looks like everybody's going to be headed to Disney World. John Lombardo, thanks so much.
Thank you, Bill.